Please be seated. Good morning. This morning I want to welcome and introduce to you, for most of you who have not met Peter yet, Peter Saros, who's with us today to speak with us. Peter is a congregational development consultant, has worked in the church for many years. He has his Master's of Divinity, comes from our Episcopal tradition, but certainly offers his ministry to those even beyond the Episcopal Church. But he has a unique way of knowing many churches. He's been in many churches offering his ministry, and we've welcomed him. He's been with us now for a few months, kind of preparing us and working with us, and he'd like to share a few thoughts with you today. So, Peter, welcome.
Thank you.
Peter's also from New York, but that's not connected to me.
Good morning. I want to start with a story about the Pope, the best thing you can do in an Episcopal church. And this isn't about the present Pope, because a present Pope is pretty cool. I mean, basically, it's like the Roman Catholics got an Episcopal Pope. And then the Episcopal Church got a black Baptist preacher. Though I know you all are used to that. But it was quite a joy to listen to the sermon from last Sunday's service when he got installed. And I think probably woke up a lot of people on their image of the Episcopal Church, which is great. So the former Pope, it turns out that they decided that he could no longer fly into Kennedy Airport in New York. And the reason being is that the last time a Pope flew into Kennedy Airport, they sent out a fancy limousine to pick him up. So he got off the plane, went down to the ground, kissed the ground, got into the fancy limousine with the Irish chauffeur, and they took off from the airport. And sure enough, before long, they were caught in traffic. And the Pope, sitting in the back of the limousine and being a bit of a control freak and used to getting his way, he can't understand why the limousine isn't moving. So he yells out to the chauffeur, he goes, "What's going on? Why are we not moving?" And the chauffeur goes, "It's New York." So the Pope is in the back of the limousine and he's getting more and more frustrated. And finally he says to the driver, "Let me drive." The chauffeur gets out of the seat, the Pope jumps to the front, gets behind the wheel, and the chauffeur's in the back seat now. And sure enough, the traffic began to move. And things started going faster and faster. And finally, they go through a radar trap. Cop pulls over the limousine, walks up to the driver's side of the window, expecting to ask for, you know, driver's license and registration, and sees the Pope. And he goes, "I'll be right back." He gets back in the car. It was back in the days when they had the radios in the car rather than on their suits. And he radios in. He goes, "I got a problem." And they go, "What do you mean you got a problem?" "I got a really big problem." They go, "How big could the problem be?" He goes, "Well, I don't know who's in the back seat, but the Pope's the chauffeur." A few of them about 3 this afternoon go, "Oh, that's what it was." But anyway. But life is not always in the order that we think it is. You know, the officer thinking of who's in the back seat. A lot of times in our life, things don't necessarily go in the way we think they should go or the way that we expect them to go. I'm sure everybody's got somebody in their family, especially with Thanksgiving coming up, who will be at your table and you will have to be very careful about what you say because you don't want to listen to it. And they kind of act like nobody's going to mess with me because they know how I am. You know, they project out a certain feeling, a certain barrier to let you know you better walk carefully. It's kind of like when you take psychology 101 in college and one of the experiments is interpersonal space. Those of you who are kids today, you want to have fun at dinner today, have somebody stand about 8 feet in front of you. and then stare into their eyes and slowly walk up on them. You'll know when you got into their interpersonal space, right? The body will tighten up, they'll look away, because you've invaded their shell. You've invaded their space. You know, in today's world, it's pretty, you know, important to a certain extent to have a little bit of space. When you think of all the pressures that are on people today, you know, all the things that years ago kind of flowed, and now you have to be careful of this and you got to be careful of that. I mean, you're 21 and you got to start thinking about your pension. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of pressure on us. So we have a tendency of wanting a little bit of space around us. And sometimes that space becomes a harder shell. Sometimes that space becomes, how do you put it? It's kind of hard to feel anything, and it's hard to project out because that wall is kind of thick. When you go through old parts of town, even driving here, going and seeing some old houses on the way, they had front porches. And I know when I was a kid, we knew everybody that lived on the block. You know, you went and hung out on the street. We had a fireman across the street who sometimes went to happy hour and stayed a little bit too long. And he would come home and go into the wrong house. And it wasn't a problem. They just walked him back and delivered him to his wife. Nowadays, if somebody came walking into your house, you don't even know they're a neighbor. At one church, I got invited to somebody's house, and I went there, you know, in the evening. And it's one of those complexes that everything looks the same. And, of course, to make it look like it's rich, they had the lights very low. So you're walking around, and you're trying to read the signs, you know, 2,000, 2,500 with an arrow to figure out what door to go to. And sure enough, I picked the wrong door. And I rang the doorbell, and a guy answered the door, and I said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I guess I got the wrong apartment. Do you know?" And I gave him the name of the people. And he said to me, "Never heard of him." I went back out and looked at the sign again, and I went to the next door from him, and it was them. You know, we don't really know our neighbors. We have all kind of gone from being a front porch society, where the community, where the street is the center of our community, to having back porches and back decks, separating us from the community. And in so many ways, it's all part of building that shell around us, having a certain amount of protection. This weekend, we've had a series of focus groups. Friday night, we met with the young families. Saturday for lunch, we had the seniors. And then Saturday night, we had the rest of us. Those that are not quite senior, though a few of them slipped in, but not under the control of children. And in those sessions, people listed out issues they deal with day to day in life. Having enough time. Young families trying to figure out, you know, who's me? Now that I'm everything into my children. You know, there are all kinds of things in life that all of us are dealing with. Some are financial, you know, some are health, all the different things. Then we ask people, what is it that brings people to St. Paul's? Right? There's plenty of other churches here. And many of you who are here weren't brought up Episcopal, so it's not like you moved to Cary and then you immediately looked up the Episcopal Church and then saluted and walked in. Probably some of you may have done church shopping, right? You went out and checked out a few churches until you found one that kind of clicked for you. So we asked people, what was it that brought you to St. Paul's? And they talked about the people. They talked about the relationships. They talked about the openness of this church. They talked about all the things that this church does that builds a community. You know, another course in college that you take is that, you know, science. You go for the lecture once a week, and then later in the week you go to a lab, and you actually practice out the theory to kind of see the reality of it. Well, I took biology 101. In my college, you had to take two semesters of a science. So I took biology 101. Somebody told me in biology 102 you had to dissect a cat. So I immediately switched to geology. But the great thing about that lab is you get to take the theory and practice it. In a way, that's what churches are. We come and we hear the lessons and we say the prayers and we say the creed. So we get our theory, we get our lecture, but in another way, what happens is that we're also having a lab for an hour and a half or maybe 2 hours, or if you go to 8 o'clock, 45 minutes, you get an opportunity to open up your shell. You get an opportunity to build relationship with other people. You get an opportunity to be cared for and to care. People talked about the children's procession that this took place as they leave the church. So many people do not live near their families. I mean, some of you that are older have to travel all over the country to see your kids. And even if your kid lives nearby, you have to almost make an appointment. So a lot of our children aren't being brought up with their grandparents. They aren't being brought up with their aunts and uncles all around. My father's family had 8 brothers and sisters. So, I mean, every weekend was a birthday party at some relative's house, and all but one lived within 15 minutes of our house. My mother had 1 sister, and every time we moved, they moved. We could always walk between houses. Now, my mother and her sister didn't talk for 20 years, but the rest of us got along fine. But nowadays, people are out there on their own. This is the place where people have their surrogate grandparents, their surrogate grandchildren, their surrogate aunts and uncles. This is the place that when a kid at some point, I was lucky, I had my grandfather. So when my parents would get on my nerves, I could go see my grandfather and tell him what they did. And especially with my mother, he said to me, "Look, I've known her longer than you, I understand." But now, who do these kids go to when you get on their nerves, which will happen at some point? Hopefully the relationships that are built here become that extended family, become that support group. Because we all are going to go through things in life. And having people around us that care is a major thing. Now this morning is Stewardship Sunday. And on Stewardship Sunday, we test out your shell. We see how thick it is and whether or not you can turn it off or lower the volume. Because we ask you to make a commitment. Because being a Christian is about making a commitment. Baptism is a commitment. Confirmation is a commitment. Marriage is a commitment. Getting ordained is a commitment. It's about saying, "I will commit." And in a general way, on Stewardship Sunday, we ask you to think about a commitment. It's about your relationship to God. It's about your relationship to each other. It's about your relationship to the church. I'm going to give 5 suggested ways of thinking about a pledge. You may take any of the 5 you wish. You may throw all 5 out and make up your own. That's fine. We're Episcopalians. Every time we have a rule, 3 years later, we vote it out. But just a way of thinking. First is scriptural, and that's tithing. That's the only giving in the Bible, is tithing. And basically, that's the giving of 10%. And I know people get up and can read really well, but Episcopalians aren't the greatest at math. So I got a formula for you. Tithing is $2 a week for every $1,000 you earn or receive per year, whether it's salary, pension, investment. So $50,000 is $100, $25,000 is $50. It's in relationship to what you've been given. Now, most of us are not perfect the day we walk in the door, and thank God that God has given Episcopalians a special exemption.
even if you were formerly a Presbyterian, you still get the exemption. And that is that we're allowed to grow in Christ. The first day we walk through those doors, we're probably not perfect. And maybe the last day we walk through those doors, we still may not be perfect. But we're allowed to grow in Christ. We're allowed to improve ourselves every week. You know, you ever talk to somebody and go, why don't you join me at church? And they go to you, oh, the church is full of hypocrites. And it always sounds negative. But I think it's great. The best thing you can be is a hypocrite. Because a hypocrite knows they can be better than what they're doing. And that's being a Christian. Knowing that whoever I am today, God will give me the strength and the ability to improve. And do it differently the next time. So we're allowed to grow. So a step toward, moving in the direction toward tithing, might be moderate tithing. The giving of 5%. That's a dollar a week for every $1,000 you earn per year. So 50,000 is 50, 25,000 is 25. Once again, in relationship to what you have. Then we have the fair share plan. What does it cost to run a church per household? What we did is we looked at a budget for this church if it was going to do all the things that people would like to see happen. And it came out to be about $63 a household. That's what it would cost to do all the things this church could do. Well, I'm sure we could do even more than that. Believe me, if everybody modern tithes, you'd have much more than that. The average pledge in the Episcopal Church is $46 a week. And that's all 7,500 churches worked through. Your leader here pledged in advance, and 40 of them put their pledges in, and it came to $240,000. It came out to be about an average of $5,500 or $109 a week. That's an extremely high average. And admittedly, there's some very large givers in there. But what the most important part of that giving was is that normally high givers, it's hard to get them to go up again because they go, I'm already there. But 83% of the 40 increased their pledge over this past year. And the average increase was $10. So there was $19,000 worth of increases from the leadership. That's a committed leadership. So you're going to be asked today to fill out a pledge card. We're going to distribute them in a couple of minutes. And we have pens. And I was told if you increase your pledge by $5,000, you can keep the pen. I have a feeling we'll get a lot of pens back, but that's okay. And we're going to ask you to fill out a pledge card, fold it in half, and then we're going to invite you to bring it up to the altar and place it in the basket on the altar. The church lives with you. And what I mean by that is that if you lose your job, lower your pledge. You seldom hear that in a stewardship sermon. If you lose your job, lower your pledge. If you hit the lotto, you can have a choice of clergy to come visit you. Because we share in your pain and we share in your joy. That's who we are as a community. We're in that relationship. If you're a visitor this morning, don't worry. We only do this to the congregation once a year. So just relax, and we'll get you next year. Anyway, at this point, if we could have the ushers hand out the pledge sheets. Your pledge sheet is a little bit different this year. On the top, if you can put what you're giving now, and then on the main pledge, you're a new pledge. If you're a new pledger altogether, well, you haven't been into pledging, just write new on the top of the card for the old part, and then put your new pledge in. If you were one of the 40 leaders, just write leader on the pledge sheet when you bring it up, because we don't want to double your pledge. Well, yes, we do, but beside the point. Okay. The ushers are giving out the pledge sheets, and they have pens if you need pens.
Gracious God, we give you thanks for the abundant blessings with which you bless our lives, and we give thanks for this opportunity to share the gifts that you have given us, to share what is yours, to transform our lives, to transform our community, and to do nothing less than to change this world. We give thanks for the power of these gifts, and may God's blessing be upon them in thanksgiving for all that we've been called to be and to do in our world. Amen.